Hi, my name is Sally Steenland, and I direct the Faith and Progressive Policy Initiative here at the Center for American Progress. With me today is Katie Zay, who's a consultant for the General Board of Church and Society at the United Methodist Church, where she coordinates the Healthy Families, Healthy Planet Initiative. Katie serves on the board of the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice and the North Carolina Abortion Fund. She worked at the Center for Health and Gender Equity and the Religious Institute, where she highlighted the connection between economic issues and reproductive justice. When Katie was at the Institute, she created the Congo Sabbath Initiative to educate congregations about sexual violence in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Welcome, Katie. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Sally.
Great. Well, let's get right into it. I want to ask you about something you recently started, and it's called No More Bills for Pills, and it has to do with the Affordable Care Act. So tell us what that is.
Right. So this actually kind of started as an accident, and I've been surprised by the response that it's gotten so far. I had an experience last week that made me realize that in my own advocacy for women's health, I tend to forget myself in that advocacy, meaning that I forget about how the policies for which I'm advocating have an application for my own life, too. So I was going to the pharmacy to pick up a prescription, and I wasn't even really thinking that I might be covered under the Affordable Care Act provision that went into effect on August 1st that includes the no copay for contraception. So I was pleasantly surprised when my bill was $0 and 0 cents. So when I got home, I thought I really wanted to share this with my friends. And so I snapped a photo of my receipt showing the $0 and 0 cents. And I posted on Facebook with just a comment that said, "Thank you, Affordable Care Act," figuring my friends would understand. And immediately they were liking it and were sharing it with their friends and were commenting that I should do something bigger with this. I should create a Tumblr, you know, a blog mm-hmm. site for it. So I started one, and I called it No More Bills for the Pills. And, you know, the next morning I got up, and it had been picked up by Planned Parenthood on their Facebook site, and then quickly got picked up by Think Progress on their Tumblr account, and eventually that afternoon got picked up by the Obama campaign. So I think since I originally posted that picture, it's been liked or shared about 8,000 times. So clearly this is something that's resonating with a lot of people. And my hope is that it provides a platform for others to share their stories and their pictures of their receipts so that we can show the real impact and to show our gratitude for this policy.
And you bring up a really important point, which is connecting your personal life with policies. Lots of times, mm-hmm. so your job is a policy job, and you work on these policies, and then you have this mm-hmm. life you live. But mm-hmm. here these two come together in very important ways.
Right, and it's so rare to have a moment where you see your own advocacy having that real impact, right? So I just thought it was a really key moment that I needed to share, and I'm just glad that other people have resonated with it too.
And I'm sure that's being echoed around the country as women are picking up prescriptions and they get the same receipt mm-hmm. as you did, which is you don't owe us any money, which is just terrific. That's great.
Right.
So I want to ask you about the important work you do with the United Methodist Church. And you work on women's health. And as part of your work, you support a full range of reproductive health services. And can mm-hmm. you tell us why is that important, both from a women's health angle and also for a religious perspective, because you're literally working for the United Methodist Church?
I am. And from both a health perspective and a religious perspective, for me, this is about honoring and respecting women and their bodies and meeting women where they are. Too often women are reduced to their reproductive organs, and this is really unacceptable for me. So that means every person seeking care should be, you know, treated as a whole person, and that means we have to offer a full range of services and integrate them. And I think about this a lot when I think about global women. So if a woman is in rural Kenya, let's say, and she makes the journey probably by foot to a clinic, and she's going to get HIV/AIDS testing and counseling. While she's there, she should also have access to a range of other reproductive health services, like family planning. Because not only does this ensure the best health outcomes for that woman, but it empowers her with the tools and resources she needs to make the best decisions about her own body and her own life and her family. Theologically, the basis of my work for United Methodist Church, where I'm working specifically on maternal health and family planning, is really rooted in a passage from the Gospel of John when Jesus says to his disciples that he came to bring them abundant life. I'm always thinking about what does abundant life mean when I think about maternal health and family planning. So it doesn't mean simply that you lack disease or we are surviving. It means that God's desire for all people and mothers is to thrive, and that includes their physical health. So when a mother is healthy, she will have a healthy child, and this trickles down into creating healthy communities and a healthy planet. And as a person of faith, this matters to me really deeply because I believe that we are all connected to each other. And so when a woman loses her life in childbirth and that child grows up motherless, that impacts me too. You know, I suffer that loss too. So as people of faith, we cannot turn our back from our sisters and our brothers who are struggling, even if they live on the other side of the world.
So that's a very powerful image that you have there, is working with women, and then the circle gets a little bit bigger for family, then it gets a little bigger for community, and eventually you're talking about the planet, which is actually the name of your initiative, which is Healthy Families, Healthy Planet. So it's all connected. And I want to ask you about the global work that you do, because you don't just work domestically. And I was reading one of your fact sheets, and it just had a really horrific statistic in it, which was that globally, a woman dies every 2 minutes from complications from either pregnancy or childbirth. That is a horrific number. Tell us about the women who are behind those numbers.
Right. Well, I will say when I first started working, the statistic was a woman dies every minute. And so since I've been working, the data has come in that has shown that it's a woman every 2 minutes. So we are making progress, but just as you said, these numbers are unacceptably high because most of these deaths are preventable. We know the health interventions that can save women's lives. I think it's especially important to talk about that statistic here in the United States, where the narrative around pregnancy and childbirth is that it's beautiful and natural, which for some women it is, but the truth is that for many women it isn't. It's very dangerous to their health. The women who die in childbirth mostly live in the global south, in developing countries, in sub-Saharan Africa and Southeast Asia. Many of them get married for their 18th birthday and begin giving birth annually soon after that. So you can think about a woman's reproductive years. She could potentially have 20 children, but it doesn't kill her first, so pretty scary to think about that. And many of these women don't have access to health workers or any kind of health care or even a clean place to give birth once they do go into labor. And many of them die from things that are preventable or treatable, like infection or hemorrhage. But to me, the saddest part is that many of these women die from pregnancies that, if they had had the tools and information that they needed, they would have avoided that pregnancy. Without family planning, women aren't able to space their pregnancies apart, and so their bodies don't have a chance to heal before they get pregnant again. For these women especially, an ill-timed pregnancy can become a life-threatening condition and, in many cases, a death sentence for her.
I just want to follow up on that, because you're talking about contraception as a good, as actually a life-saving thing, which can save women's lives, which can promote stronger families, and promote healthier babies too. And so often at least in this country and globally as well, I think that some of the opposition to contraception is a religious opposition, and sometimes the debate is framed as a religious opposition versus women's health. But what you're saying, you're including in the women's health support both a religious support for contraception from a moral point of view, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's important to realize that that kind of debate is it actually isn't religion versus health. There's a religious support for women's health as well that you're actually working on every single day.
Yes, and it's important for that perspective to be voiced more often,
right.
So that there's more of a nuanced view of what faith actually has to say,
right,
about contraception and other reproductive health matters.
Right. And when people have a religious opposition, there are, in fact, religious arguments on the other side of that, too.
There are.
I want to ask about the grassroots advocacy that you're doing in this country, and you're promoting an initiative, your Healthy Families, Healthy Planet initiative here. Tell us about the trainings you're doing and what you want to see happen.
This is so exciting. We did our first training last October and trained about 35 people in Denver, and this year we're actually doing two of those trainings, and we'll be training an additional 45 people from all over the United States. And my vision for these trainings is to bring together a powerful and diverse group of people of faith who are passionate about justice and health and women's empowerment, and together share with them and learn what's happening to the world's women. Like what we've been talking about, women who are dying and suffering needlessly, and then empower them and inspire them to claim their own voice as advocates for and with the world's women when they return to their community. So whether they're with their local pastor or their bishop or their representative or senator, these advocates will be champions for women's health. And my hope is that through their passion and their knowledge, they will call others to join them to take action. And ultimately, we are working toward a world where every woman has the tools she needs to plan her life, and that every pregnancy is a cause for celebration and not fear.
That's a beautiful vision. That sounds really wonderful. I want to ask a little, continue with the United Methodist Church. Every 4 years you have a general conference, and you just had one. And at that conference, you submitted a petition on maternal health. Tell us what was in it and what happened to that petition as it made its way up the, or worked its way through the channels.
Yeah. Well, in short, it passed. So,
congratulations.
Thank you. That means that it'll be included as an official statement in our book of resolutions, which is really exciting. I drafted this resolution back in the winter of 2010 because as I was scanning our United Methodist social principles and book of resolutions, I could only find a handful of references to the issues around maternal health and nothing that really went into detail about the complexity of this issue. And the United Methodist Church is a global church. So I felt like this was something that needed to be named in a global context. So the resolution explores the health and cultural barriers that stand in the way of good health outcomes for women. And it even references some of our own biblical tradition where women died in childbirth and relating that to what women are currently suffering even today. And then it calls the church to take action in a number of ways, including doing this kind of advocacy that our project is engaged in. So moving forward, you know, we hope that this resolution will be an educational tool that we'll be able to take to churches and United Methodist conferences, and that it will be really powerful to have this official document of the church that will strengthen our nominal basis for doing advocacy work on maternal health. And we'll probably also be taking it on an advocacy visit to Capitol Hill as well. So it's really exciting to have, like I said, an official statement that we can turn to and show that this is something that our church is committed to working to improve.
That sounds exciting, and I like that you've included stories of women in the Bible. I mean, not that they've, you know, it's not a happy thing that they've died in childbirth, but that's a reality, and that comes right straight from the scripture and is very relevant to what you were just talking about before.
Right, and actually this made me think, I did a piece last December around Advent and describing that for me, the real miracle of the Christmas story is that Mary survived.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? She was in a dirty stable, a young woman who managed to have a healthy birth, and that's something that should be celebrated along with the birth of Jesus.
That's a very good point. I want to ask you about the Faith and Reproductive Justice Leadership Institute, which is here at CAP, and you are one of the leaders and one of the members of it. And as a leader in that institute, from your vantage point, what do you see as some of the most pressing issues when you look at reproductive justice and faith in the coming months? What are some priorities?
Well, I think what we were actually discussing a little earlier, I mean, I think domestically there is a need for more people of faith to talk about their support of contraception, not only as something that's permissible in their faith traditions, but something that is encouraged by their faith tradition. So just as an example, the United Methodist Church states that it's our duty to consider the impact on the world when we are planning our families and deciding how many children we would like. And so that decision to delay or to prevent a pregnancy through a family planning method would actually be seen as an ethical choice by the church. So the problem is that no one is saying this publicly, and that perspective is missing in the conversations around the Affordable Care Act and its provisions around contraception. So I think that that's something that those of us who come from traditions that are supportive of family planning really need to step up and make that statement more often. And I think just looking globally, you know, the same is true. We just had this great moment in London, the London Family Planning Summit that happened in July. It was just an amazing moment where international family planning is at the forefront of the, you know, the international stage. But it's something that we have to continue to build on. And I think this is especially important to the United States. We've been a leader on family planning programs for a long time, but because of budget issues and political divisions, I mean, that leadership is in danger of dwindling a bit. And I think it's a really a critical time for faith leaders to talk about the importance of investing in new programs, not only here in the U.S., but around the world.
I totally agree with you. As a public good, as a moral thing to do, and as a good investment of our money as well. Mm-hmm. When you look at the work that you're doing and you look at the landscape, what are some particular challenges that you face? And then to flip the coin for a bit, what excites you?
Mm-hmm. I've worked on a number of different reproductive health issues in a number of contexts. And for me, the challenge seems to be the same no matter where I'm working or what issue. And the first is it's a double-sided challenge. The first is to educate our secular counterparts that people of faith can be and are supportive of these issues and have been for a long time. I think that that's something that comes up no matter where I am, is people are surprised that people of faith are supportive of reproductive justice issues. So we have to do the hard work of dispelling that myth that all religious people are against reproductive decision making. And the second is the flip side, to help people connect their religious beliefs to these reproductive justice issues. Because for so long, we have been afraid to talk about sexuality and reproductive justice in our faith communities. But you know, the world's women really cannot wait for us to get over our embarrassment and hesitation on this. I mean, it's time for us to put those things aside and to be prophetic and meet people where they are. And I would say, you know, it's really an exciting time to be working on these issues because even though change is slow, it's very deep when it happens in the church. And when I meet with a group of people, a women's group or a congregation, and I share what I've shared with you about the statistics and also share stories from people on the ground, I can see people being changed. I see their eyes being opened and their hearts being broken, and they want to do something about this. So I feel grateful for the opportunity to be involved as an advocate, and I'm inspired by the people that I meet along the journey who are working alongside me to create a better world for women and their families. So when things get tough or discouraging, I just remember that I'm not alone in this work. I have wonderful colleagues and people who are just waiting to hear about this before they get on board and will join this community that's working to create a healthier world for women and for all people.
Well, you're a terrific messenger for all of these important messages. And I just want to say that you're right, when it does get discouraging, you one way of measuring some successes you've had, that's a pretty objective way to do it, is to go from 1 minute to 2 minutes. You know, it used mm-hmm. to be a woman died every 1 minute, now every 2 minutes. Think of how it's still way, way too often. But those are, half of those lives are now saved again. So that's a really concrete victory.
It is, and it means that what we are doing is working. We just need to do more of it.
Right, and go from 3 to 4 to 5 to way, way, way beyond that.
Right, right.
Well, thank you so much, Katie. It's just been great talking with you and learning more about your work.
Thank you, Sally. Thanks for having me.